Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I am one of your hosts, Anna, and I am joined, as always, by my book besties, Kim and Christina.
Hello, friends!
Hey!
And we are here today, tonight, this evening, whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this. We are here discussing the first book in the Kindred Curse series, Spark of the Everflame, by Penn Cole.
Yeah, we are!
Before we do a spoiler warning, though, Kim is going to do a Patreon shout-out. And then we're going to give you a quick spoiler-free review.
Yeah, someone had a really great idea for us to maybe give like a little elevator pitch of our spoiler-free thoughts beforehand in case anybody wants to click on this, but they haven't read the book yet. So stay tuned for that. Okay, but let's do a quick Patreon shout out for our tier two book betches.
Woo!
Tonight we are going to be shouting out Torin, Kelly, Kelsey, Felicia Vasquez, Ashley Orshiro, and Kate Kennedy.
Yay!
Thank you guys!
Thanks, guys. We love you so much with our whole hearts.
Y'all are the best.
Thank you all.
Okay.
Okay, so like Kim said, quick spoiler-free thoughts before we dive in for those listeners who maybe haven't had a chance to pick up the book yet and are curious on our thoughts. So I would say that we really loved it, right?
Love it.
Like,
love
we
it.
Really loved it. And we'd heard, I mean, for the most part, everybody that DM'd us really loved the series. We had a couple people who were like, you know what, the main female character was kind of annoying, really had her head buried in the sand. And I can see definitely where that viewpoint comes from. But to me, it read as a first book.
For sure.
You know, like where she is very much, our main female character, DM, is like very much in denial about what's going on with herself. But what I've told a couple of my girlfriends who I've convinced to read it in the last week is that it felt like a very refreshing fantasy read. It was a really fun world, kind of like a unique world, unique magic system, fun leading characters, but not like 100 different people that you have to keep straight. The world and the magic so far is very straightforward, which is I keep saying this word, but it's very refreshing. And it was just really fun. The characters are engaging. The plot is fun. She's a beautiful writer. Mm-hmm. There's lots of quotes that we highlighted that we all just thought really kind of like hit us in our heart.
Yeah.
And we're really excited to read the next book.
Totally.
So highly recommend
it. Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, so that's it. Now after this point, spoilers for the first book.
We are going to be spoiling everything in the first book
going
forward, starting now. Okay.
Okay,
so I'm going to start us off with a little bit of our cast of characters, our like main key players, refresher. Here are the VIPs, people you need to know.
Love it.
We're going to start out with DM Bellator. She is our female lead. She's a mortal healer. She lives with her stepfather, mother, and brother all in the mortal city in Lumnos. At the beginning of the story, we learn that her mother just vanished without a trace months ago. So that's like a big jumping off point for us, that's like a big catalyst for her. I really love this quote about her just in general. It says, quote, "I'd always been a spitfire. I'm proud of it. An unbreakable spirit in a world that wanted me to be quiet, small, and subservient." And I feel like I feel like that does actually really describe her.
For sure.
I agree.
Aurelie Bellator. She is her mom, DM's mother. She was a healer for the crown and then poof, vanished. The last time that DM sees her, she is speaking in an alley to a scarred, descended gentleman.
Ooh.
Luther.
Who could that be?
Who could this be? The scar? Oh, sexy scar man.
The moment the scarred man enters the picture, I went, love interest.
That's it.
Oh, 100%.
Tell me more about scarred men.
More about this.
Yes. Okay. Her brother's name is Teller Bellator. He is her half brother, and he attends a descended school because he's just such a smarty pants. And it's a deal with his mom, but still attends the descended school. And there he's friends with Princess Lillian, which is just adorable. Andre Bellator, her father, we will get way more into him later, but he is DM's stepfather. And he is a great mortal war hero. That really ties into his character a lot. Henry, not Henri, as it's spelled. Indeed, Henry.
Yep. Confusing, but that's what it is.
You know?
Henri.
Okay, Henry is DM's childhood best friend, but, you know, best friend no longer. Now they are lovers. He hates the Descended. Really, really hates them. like mm-hmm. to an extreme because of his mother's death. There's history there. He is also a royal courier, which just pretty much means he's a mailman for the royals. He is a member of the Mortal Rebellion group, which is important. They're called the Guardians of the Everflame. We will get more into that later. Next up, we have Prince Luther.
Shadow Daddy.
Hello. There's not like a good nickname for Luther. Like Luthy, Lulu.
No.
None of these are hot.
Hey, Lulu.
So like listeners, if there is like a fan sexier name for him, just like send it to us because we would love.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, Luther doesn't do it for me.
It doesn't. It sure doesn't.
But what a testament though to the hotness that he is that we still think he's
so hot.
Yes.
So Hot Prince Luthy. No, okay. Hot Prince Luther is he is Scarred Man, first of all. But also, he is the king's nephew and heir to the descended throne in Lumnos. Important to note, he is one of the only Lumnos descended that can wield both light and shadow magic. Very interesting.
He's so strong
in the magics. Okay. and then, yes, he is the scarred man that she saw last person to speak to her mother. Yeah. Okay. Next up, we have Lily, who's just the sweetest, cutest little princess. She's Luther's younger sister. She's 16. So we haven't actually like seen her powers come to fruition yet, which is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's going to be interesting. And she has a cutie crush on Teller and he has a crush on her. And it's just
forbidden love.
Sweetest They're little so innocent cute. Sweeties. Okay. And then lastly, we have Mora. So she's the head healer and she's kind of like a grandma, great aunt, like words of wisdom type figure to DM. Mm-hmm. With her mom being gone, especially, she's kind of like filled that void for her.
Yeah.
Okay, those are our key players, guys. That's our cast of characters. Anna, do you want to run us through some world building?
I do. Yeah. I love when we get a new world. Yay. It's so exciting.
History lesson with Anna. We're back.
Okay, so the main, I guess it's like country, like the system of realms.
Yeah, I just say the world.
Yeah. You know, we only have this one circle and it's literally a circle.
But it's so, again, it's so simplistic and it just works. Yes. Like it's interesting, but it's not overly complicated with like 87 things. I'm like, wait, where? Like I'm like zooming in, like, where is this? It's like, just follow the wheel.
It's follow the wheel. And then in the center of the wheel is the kindred like island with the temple, which we'll get to
at the end
in the epilogue. Yeah. So, okay, the circle of realms is called Amarion. There are 9 realms on this like spokes, let's call them, on this wheel. Mm-hmm. We have Lumnos, which is like where the main story takes place. That is the realm of light and shadow. Fortos, the realm of force and valor. It's where the healing and stuff happens. Faunos, the realm of beast and brute. Ouroboros, realm of root and thorn. Ignios, the realm of sand and flame. This is the place that Henry tells DM later towards the end of the book that Ignios kicked out all of the human mortals and basically like had them burned to death on the sand dunes.
It wasn't good.
Those that could not escape successfully to the next realm, Umbros, which is the realm of mind and secret. Mm. This one has me the most intrigued because they are accepting humans. And it's noted that like quite a few of the realm like leaders don't like the Queen of Umbros. Which makes me think that we might like her.
I think we might. Maybe we might like her.
We might be friends. I don't
know. You just, you know.
Okay, we have Myros, the realm of sea and sky, and Sophos, which is the realm of thought and spark. That's where everybody goes to, like,
study
and university and study and whatever. Montios, which is the realm of stone and ice. Okay, so those are our 9 realms. And like I said, the main story takes place in Lumnos, like in the mortal city. There's also the immortal city, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I'm going to quickly just run us through a quick history of the world. So our world was created when 9 immortal siblings, their home world was destroyed and they found themselves on this planet in Amarion, on this continent. And like all superior beings who think that their shit doesn't stink, they decided to like take over and be like, okay, we're now like the new gods and we're all powerful. But these godlike siblings, they were called the Kindred. They each fell in love with a mortal human. And I'm guessing it's like a fated mate type situation where they didn't want to watch their loved ones like wither and die. So what they did was they bound their souls to the mortals. Mm-hmm. And it was called the forging spell. Okay. So through that spell, Amarion was broken up into 9 realms, each one named after one of the kindred. And it was infused with that patron god or goddess's respective magic. And the kindred had intended for like their offspring with those mortals to be like this new race, and that was the Descended. And they wanted for it to be like this peaceful coming together of the gods and the humans. And well, that went to shit because honestly, I don't know what they expected, but peace and prosperity was would not have been on my bingo card.
No. For sure.
Okay, so we also have old gods.
We don't know a lot about the old gods.
We don't. We just know it's outlawed for the humans to worship or really like reference them.
Yes.
Okay, so facts about descended magic. This is important because I feel like this is going to
come up in later books. Yep.
Yeah. So do the descendants have like, depending on where they're born, that is the magic that they inherit. So Luther is light and shadow. But they can only use their magic in their respective realms. So if Luther leaves Lumnos and goes to Fortos, his magic is null and void, which is why, like, when any of these descended need, like, super healing type power, they have to go, they have to leave their realm to go visit Fortos where the healing magic is. Yeah. Okay, so mortals seem to only have brown eyes, which...
Except for DM.
Who has gray eyes. Yeah.
And white hair.
I think it might be a writing tool to like have us be able to, by seeing someone, distinguish who they, like what they are.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because each descended, based on what realm they're in, has a different eye color. So like Lumnos has various shades of blue eyes. So yeah.
Like, you know, it's just right. Similar.
Yeah. Okay, the last two things I want to touch upon, the Godstones and the Fortosian Blades. Which are two different things.
I think this is going to come up.
These are going to be important, guys.
Like, Godstone, for sure.
For sure. So the Godstone is the only known substance that is actually lethal to a descended. One little nick can, like, it's like a toxin in their blood. Uh-huh. But that is not the same thing as Fortosian steel, which DM has a dagger that she got. And the Fortosian steel can, like, I guess the skin of a descended is, like, very strong. And the Fortosian steel is one of the only things that can pierce a descended skin. So it's not necessarily lethal.
Right.
But it can, like, it could be if you stab them in the right place, I guess. But it doesn't release, like, a toxin.
Right. We've learned what can kill a more, like, a magical being in a book is really up for the author's interpretation. It could be their head has to be cut off. It could be the chest. It could be you could, doesn't matter. Yeah. The head could just plop back on. We don't know.
Okay, so that's the world.
Yeah. Okay, let's do like a little where we're starting off this little tale, okay? So obviously in the prologue, which the prologue, you guys, is very interesting. I love a vague prologue. Like I love a like, what does this mean? What do you...
Yeah, and it was just so perfectly done. Like it really grabbed you. Like this is the catalyst for my story, I think is what she says or something like
it's
that.
It's so interesting. It's, it like really draws you in. So basically we know from what Christina told us that Arlie, DM's mom, has just completely disappeared. However, DM was tending to somebody in like, they're all kind of live in the slums, but she was tending to somebody and she sees her mom randomly talking to this scarred descended man, who we now know to be Luther. And they are having a very interesting conversation and she's trying to eavesdrop on them so she can't hear everything that they're saying.
Right.
But basically the, you know, gist is she's like, it has to be tonight. And he's like, you don't tell me what to do. And she's like, but I do. And he's like, no, I've had enough of your extortion and blackmail. Okay, so she says to Luther, need I remind you that one word from me and the entire realm will know that you, and then he cuts her off.
Like, what do you guys think that means?
I don't know. And then she says, if I die, everyone will find out your secret. I've made sure of it.
I have like so many theories on this.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Is there any chance that he's like not fully descended, but he's like DM?
I think
that would be a huge secret.
No, I think he's sick or something. I think there's something like, because remember, we'll get into this at the end, but also the title of the book is Kindred's Curse. So clearly he has some sort of curse.
There's a whole thing at the end when DM, we'll save it for the ending.
So yeah, Arlie goes missing. She's been missing for 6 months, friends. Okay. And no one seems to be really that concerned about it? And I'm like, is there no investigation? Are we not doing search parties? I watch too much true crime. I'm like, why are there no milk cartons? Why are we not doing posters? Why is there no Dateline episode? Like, what are we doing?
Where in the world is Aurelia Bellator?
Yeah.
Aurelie.
She's just kind of like, she's taken over. She's working with Mara as a healer. Yeah. Life is going on, despite her mom being missing without a trace. Okay, fine. And DM learns about the deal that Arlie made with Luther. And that deal was that if Arlie was the crown's healer and came intended to King Ulthar, because King Ulthar, the reigning king of Lumnos, is dying. And Arlie is like a renowned healer. She was a healer during the war that we'll get to in a minute that happened.
Right.
So she's very, very talented and like kind of renowned. And so she agrees to go be the crown's healer. Because remember, like Anna said, if they want healers, they have to go to Fortos and see them. And obviously the king is right. he can't leave his realm.
And nobody, it's noted that like the descendant don't like to leave their designated realms because they feel powerless. When they leave their realm, they lose their power. And now they're at like other descendants' mercy, basically.
So that's why the mortal healers are so important, because that's really all they have. And they have to depend on the mortal healers to heal them. So she says, okay, I will if you let my son Teller go to a descended school. Because mortals usually end school at 14 and they go into like labor, like manual labor jobs. They don't go to right. any kind of high school or college or anything. The descended go to higher education schools, kind of college, and they get to study all sorts of different things, and they just have a much better education and are therefore theoretically set up to like be successful in life. So basically this is a huge opportunity for Teller. So that's the deal. So Teller's going to a descended school. That's how he meets Princess Lillian, and Aurelie will be the crown healer. So something really interesting though, and I just don't know what I still can't figure out what this means, even though the book is over. So Luther says to Diem later in the book, when she's like running away in the castle, like being really kind of a dumb. I just bless her heart. But like, I don't know where she thought that was going to work out. But he says, "Don't end up like your mother. She betrayed me and lost my trust. You should learn from her mistakes."
That's fascinating.
Again, there's a secret about Luther. And then he says, "But your mother betrayed me." Like, what does that mean? Who did she betray him to or did share a secret with? I want to know.
Yeah. So before we move on, something really, really interesting that we wanted to chat about that came up in this book was the theme of kind of colonization that is so prevalent throughout this book. And I love what Pinkole did. I love the quotes that she put in where Diem is talking to various people and she speaks about the, you know, old gods and the religion. And just more than that, like this is kind of sums up and we can go talk based off this. She says, "After all, that's what they, the descended, had done to Amarion. The descended had infected our once thriving kingdom like a virus, infiltrating our homes and our religions, our cities and our universities, only to rise from the ashes of the blood war and ban mortal kind from the very same realm that mortal hands had built." And we've obviously seen this in real life. We've seen this happen in not just the United States, but all over the world. And I just thought, I loved that she put this in here. And I love that this, because it's such a real thing. Like it's not like a fantasy situation. This is real.
Yeah.
No, this is something relatable. And that we can understand why, I know we're about to like go into the rebels, but you can understand why there's a rebel uprising.
Yeah.
I mean, we have issues with the Guardians, but there is a empathy that you can have towards their plight and their cause.
Sure,
Because they're an oppressed group of people who are trying to get out from the thumb of these powerful beings. Yeah. Yeah.
And they've gone so far as to even, you know, call the religion that was established when they were there, like the old gods, basically like the old way of worshiping and all of this stuff. And it's even, they call it blasphemy. Like it's, isn't it a crime? Can't you be like executed
it's
for
outlawed. It? Yeah. I mean, it's outlawed. Is the direct word as they use is it's outlawed. Okay.
To say like the rites that DM says several times, which is interesting. Every single time she says the rites of the old gods, something happens.
It does.
That's very interesting.
Very interesting.
But they say like that's blasphemy to say that. Like you don't even utter those. And it's so sad to see
that. DM is real casual though about just saying these sacred rites that are like very much like blasphemy and you could be beheaded or whatever. And she's just like casually dropping it. I'm like,
she's like, okay, here we go. Well,
and also like in the same, and like 2 pages ago, she was like, "Oh, Henry, you have a tattoo that's always hidden on a tree." And like, I am just appalled that you would ever even
could you
like think to get a tattoo hidden on your body, like on his body. Like shoulder blade or something.
Honestly,
like,
yeah, it was
like, like, girl, you're just standing in public, like saying these
reciting
a soliloquy.
Here we go, all together now. Our Father who art in
heaven.
Like, she's like, "Henry, how could you?" And he's like, "I mean, it's covered by my shirt." Yeah. She's out here just preaching the gospel and on Pleasure Row. Like, it's no big deal.
I would never want to be filleted by the descendant. Like, well, it's interesting though.
So funny.
That she does use it in her healing though. Like,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
She takes that very seriously. Yeah.
Her mother kept textbooks. It's made a note of.
Oh,
it's
really?
One of the, she makes a point. It's one of the only things like my mom went against the rules for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, like, that's right.
Why you got
but
those? Like,
but why do you have them? What's in there?
What do you have them for?
Okay, Christina.
Okay, yeah. I feel like this is, yeah, an interesting segue into the rebels themselves. So, so the rebel group here is the Guardians. Mm-hmm. The Guardians of the Everflame was also the same name of the rebel group from the war. Like, that's, like, the same name. It's the same group. They've just been, like, hiding in silence, like, gaining followers. But, yes, so the Tree of the Everflame is their symbol. And it's the, that's the Tree of Life and Death, which is very interesting. Yes, like we mentioned, the tattoos are a thing. She doesn't last long enough to get one. But she's like, I'm not doing it, which I thought was really funny. But I also wonder, like, what the rules are. Like, could you be like, okay, I just want, like, super tiny, like, on my, like...
Really delicate.
Like, I just want, like, super... Like, can I get, like, an outline? Like, a nice little...
Yeah, I don't want it shaded. Just...
Probably just, like, that Barek guy just, like, with us.
Over, it's 100% in the alley.
So something else interesting that really, really felt cultish to me was the way that they're, like, brother, sister, father, mother. Like, yes, brother Isaiah. Like, I don't know. Something about...
Yeah,
and I get it. It was
very culty.
It made sense in the group. But it really added a level of like, oh, unsettlingness to the meetings,
for
I think. But that also led us to Mother. So the Mother is the lady who, it's so funny, at some point DM's like, yeah, your little tree club. And he's like, well, a woman actually runs my little tree club. And she's like, what? And then she's like, wait, who is it? Do I know her? And he says, I can't say, no revealing anyone's identity, remember? And then she says, well, would I get to work with her? And this is very interesting. He says, I hope so, he said, his eyes softening with some inscrutable emotion. She's a force to be reckoned with, just like you.
I'm telling you, it's her mom.
I was gonna say,
that's what I thought,
but
too.
But the fact that they literally call her mother, I want to be like, I don't, it feels too on the nose.
I don't know. And I know, like, obviously, like, I'm no fan of Henry, but I just think it would be cruel to allow DM to think that her mom is gone when Henry knows that she's not gone. And not only is she not dead, is she not gone. People know, well, I guess not that people know where she is. But
maybe,
like,
we're reading too much into this. But it's just weird that it's like with softness in his eyes. And I'm like, well, what does that
mean? Well, you know what, though? You know what, though? Henry lost his mom. So maybe he just is kind of like latched on to like this female figure in his life.
True.
And now that Arlie is also gone, like, maybe he just has, I mean,
that's
he seems
true.
To have, like, he's clearly very attached to this group. He's very, like, he's made it his whole identity, his whole personality. So it would make sense that he's, like,
literally
super attached to this, whoever this woman is that, like, runs this group. So it could just be that.
Yes, yes. And
that's
that
a good point.
Is, like, making this, like, it's emotional to him to talk about her because
he needs another hobby.
He needs a hobby.
He needs to, like, collect stamps. You know what? Like, he's a mail courier.
Like, knit. I don't know.
I think she uses the Guardians really well.
Yeah.
Like, going off of what we were just talking about, like, the themes of oppressors versus the oppressed and, like, the different social classes. Like,
yeah.
We also get to see through the Guardians this discussions of justice and, like, morality and trying to fight back on both sides and how then both sides feel like they're doing the right thing. And it's like, we get to see it in an interesting way, I think, through the Guardians. There's an interesting quote that says, each side was convinced they were fighting for good, each of them believing that the killings they committed were righteous and justified to prevent the death of innocents.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
Yeah, it is.
And that's war. I mean, that's the nightmare that is war. But it's really interesting that we get this, like, we see her get so upset about moments that happen that are justifiably awful and terrible.
For
and
sure.
You're like, oh, of course, fight back, do something about this, DM. Like, do something.
Like when she sees a child be killed. Yeah.
Exactly.
But then on the flip side, it's like the Guardians are killing innocents too.
Right. And the descendants that we're seeing are Lillian and Luther and people who were like born into this and did not make these decisions.
Right.
But also are not bad people that we don't want to be exploited. You know what I mean? Like, it's
Henry has this quote that it's at the end, but I kind of want to read it now because I actually feel like it goes perfectly with the rebel and like what you were just talking about. This is at the very end of the book when DM confronts him. She's talking about violence and how like there has to be another way. And he says, it's the only solution.
In all of mortal history, violence is the only thing that's ever worked. Every right that we have, we've had to scrape and claw and kill for. People with power don't give it away out of the kindness of their hearts. They do it when we leave them no other choice, when they are sure as hell aren't giving us our homeland back unless we have a knife to their throat, a knife that can actually make them bleed.
Wow.
And I thought that was like a really good quote to show just the plight of like how the mortals are feeling, like, we are at our wits' end. We don't know what else to do.
Well, and clearly totally. You're not going to give us anything without us being, right. You know.
And that's fair. Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Like, clearly the descendant are not just going to be like, oh, you know what? We've had a change of heart. After all these years, we're going to give up our riches.
You want us over.
You want us over. Y'all are so great.
Exactly. And because, like, you know, I said, we do see Lillian and we do see Luther. But we also hear these examples of, like, the guy who sent them out into the sand to, like, burn to death. And then there's, like, oh, God, the whole thing, which we won't discuss. We won't go into. But there's the mother and child scene with the descendant. And like,
yeah, that was really rough.
But in like those moments, you're like, burn them all.
Burn them
all.
Hell.
The
absolutely.
Descendants need literally. To die. Burn them down. All. You know, and she just like gets you in that moment.
Well, it brings up this moral, like ethical dilemma of at what point when you are fighting back as a rebel cause, right? You're fighting back for your freedom. But at what point does your morality cross that bound and do you lose your humanity?
Yeah.
And I think that's the part that was really... is a struggle for DM is that she has this, she's a healer and her first instinct is to do no harm.
Agreed. And just to touch on Henry for a second.
It's so just like.
He can't see the forest for the trees.
He can't. And I think.
It's like Kim said, it's his whole personality.
It's his whole personality. And there's a quote where she is justifying trying to get into the Guardians. And she just says, maybe he needed a purpose as much as I did. And to be able to share it with each other, maybe that was what we needed to bring us back together and restore what we'd been before my mother's disappearance. And I feel like that like adds this emotional weight that she's putting on it to like, oh, I can do this. I can be a guardian. And I feel like that plus the feelings of seeing all of this stuff around her leads her for that to be more important than her healing oath. Like for that to overshadow that, like that feeling of like, my job is to do no harm.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's a good point.
Great segue.
Okay. So yeah. So we've kind of like started talking about how DM and this whole inner struggle that she's been having. And I think it was kind of like a clever writing choice on Penn Cole's part. You know, this whole idea, like we've talked about, that the descendant can't leave their designated realm of magic, right? So it kind of opens up the door for the healers, for people like Mora and Aurelie and DM to now have to find their way into the castle to treat these descended who can't treat themselves because they don't want to travel to Fortress.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Yeah, like the descended need them and the healers need them for payment. Like they need it for their job. So it's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, I really liked that.
But I really liked this conversation with Mora and DM because, I mean, listeners, I feel like I've talked about my husband before, but he's a physician and he's an oncologist and he's had to deal with like all different types of patients. And I've heard not just from him, but like from so many friends of ours who have had to treat patients who it is very, very clear that like they don't see things the same way. Like I've had female friends who are physicians who they've had a male patient who has said like, I don't want to be treated by a woman. Get me a man. You know, like that type of sexism. And then we've also had it really bad when there have been patients who have requested a different race of a person. And there is still, you have to treat the patient. Yeah. Like you don't have a choice. Like that's what you're here to do. It's first do no harm and everybody deserves the healthcare.
Yeah.
And I was a medical ethics minor in college. Mm-hmm. We had professors from Baylor College of Medicine who would come and like do lecture halls and we would be posed with these types of questions, like real patient type situations. And then we would have to like argue the ethics behind it. But I love this quote, this like scene with Mora and DM when Mora's like, okay, we have to go treat the king. And it's clear that DM is having a problem with it. That like she just saw the child killed in front of her. She held him.
Right.
Just because he was the child of a mortal woman and a descendant, which I feel like we haven't said yet, but that's against the law.
Yeah.
But anyways, so Maura says, DM, is treating the king going to be a problem for you? You know we leave our opinion of our patients at the door. And then she says, you're better than this. You've always been the healer we could send to our worst, most disagreeable clients. We sent you because you had the compassion for them. Under all your sass, you still treated every patient like a human being who deserved a chance to be saved. They descended from Lunos's mortal mate, too. They are children of both worlds. They might have forgotten that, but we don't have to.
Oh, and I love that.
Love that.
That is a great line. And it's such a good, like, it's such a good reminder of, like,
yeah,
they're all people too. And just because mm-hmm. their great, 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 great grandparents are terrible people and they might be terrible people, like, you still have to do your job.
Exactly. And it's like that child that she treats for her test, you know, that's not her fault. Her father's an asshole, but, like, it's not that child's fault. It's not the son's fault.
Right, right. Totally.
And I feel like that's, like, you know, there are going to be assholes whether you're human or descended. You're going to come across them.
Yeah. And all you can do is then just be kind to these kids because no one's been kind to them. So, like, leave them with some, with, someone's I see this example, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's so good with kids. I loved seeing her interact with the kids. I thought that was really, really sweet. She was, like, joking with them. I loved it, too. And it was really nice to see.
It was really sweet. Like, when the building collapses and is it Alaric? Is that his name?
I don't know how you say it. Sorry.
Elric? But he comes and finds him. He's so, I mean, like, seeing him, a descended, right, so distraught that there are children being hurt. It doesn't matter if you're mortal, immortal, descended, human. Seeing children hurt is like a gut punch.
Ugh.
And it was a very humanizing moment. I thought it was a really smart moment to do it so early in the book.
Agreed. Yeah.
And she, you know, orally, DM's mother has forbidden her from going to the castle to be around the descended.
Interesting.
I wonder why.
Mama, why have we done that? Why do we not want her around the descended?
Weird. But DM's like, you need my help. Like, I'm coming. You're going to need more hands than just Maura.
Yeah.
So she goes and she helps Lily. And this is going to bring us into DM's power. But she is treating Lily and she has stopped taking the flame root.
Oh.
Yeah, we're going to get into the flame root. But she stopped taking it and she's starting to hear, like, this voice in her head. And she, like, her hands light up and all of a sudden, like, Lily's healed from this internal bleeding.
She was, like, bleeding out everywhere. And Dan was like, shit.
And there's a blinding light, which then is, she's like, oh, well, that must be normal. We're just, like, all these weird things happen. And she's like, oh, yep, that's fine.
Well, okay, but the important thing to take away from this is, okay, so she just sets the arm, which, you know, when you're first reading it, you're like, yeah, okay, she set a bone. Then come to find out when she gets back to the mortal world or mortal city, she's with Maura and she's like, yeah, you know, I had to set Lily's bone. And she's like, Maura's like, wait, you said it? You did it? And she's like, yeah, what? Like, it's hard?
Like, it's hard?
And she's like, well, but actually, their bones are iron. So, like, you literally shouldn't be able to set a bone. And she's like, that's really funny. I don't know what happened.
I don't know. Because in that moment, too, Luther's like, oh, no, I should do it. Let me do it. And she's like, this pretentious prick. Yes. He thinks he knows how to do my job better than me. And she's like, I've got it. He's like, no, but I don't think you do have it. And then she did. She's like, like, what?
Yeah.
But I feel like this brings us into, like, DM's power, which has been really fun to speculate on.
It's okay. So fun.
So DM's power is super interesting. I love the progression of her magic throughout this book. I felt like it was really, I mean, she was not realistic about it at the end, but at the beginning, because remember, and this is what we kind of kept in mind, and this is why it didn't annoy me too much. Now, book two, I'm gonna need her to wake up a little bit. But this book, remember that her mom has told her whole life that it's not her power, it's not power, it's hallucinations, it's visions, it's like a madness almost. And that
she told her she was sick, right? She contracted the same illness her father had, her bio dad.
Yeah, her bio dad. She said your dad suffered from the same hallucinations and that's why DM is taking the flame root powder, okay?
The amount of gaslighting going on.
You know, obviously you're going to believe your mom. That's your mother. Like, why would she not believe her? Mom's also a healer, so her mom should know.
And it's not like they have a tumultuous relationship.
No. And she's looks up to her mother and loves her very dearly. So she's like, okay, hallucinations. Yeah. Mom says so. She knew my dad. So,
also,
like,
she's made me go through my whole damn life correcting everyone every 5 minutes and saying, like,
No, I had an illness when I was little.
I know.
She has a script.
Go through this whole rigmarole. Every time I met someone new, clearly it had to be the truth.
Right.
Okay, so her magic. So the first instance that we see of her magic is her and Henry are traveling to Fortos. He wants her to come along. And is the wolf before they actually cross the border into Fortos?
It's before.
Okay. So before that, they're camping, they have some sexy time, and she falls asleep. And she has a bad dream. She wakes up, she goes into the woods, and there's a wolf, and it's going to attack her. And there's a voice inside of her head, and she thinks, like, oh no, the hallucinations are back. This is not real.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. She's like, oh, the voice that I, you know, it's my medicine. I'm off my meds, and I'm now just crazy. And that's what this voice is in my head. It is saying, like, fight. Okay, and then right before the wolf lunges to attack her, it says, the voice inside of her says, destroy. Very interesting, okay? Because that's Fortos's power.
I'm like imagining like this like poof, like ash, like in the shape of a wolf that just like falls.
That's how I pictured it. Yeah.
She opens her eyes and it's like where the wolf was. It was like just like little embers of ash.
Yeah, and it says it was like charred like hair. Like it smelled like charred like hair. So she like literally disintegrates this wolf. Immediately is like, oh, this was a bad dream. Oh dear. Gotta get back. Uh-oh. Okay, that was a bad dream. Oh, let's get back. Even though I'm awake, and I know I'm awake, but anyway, I'm gonna get back to Henry.
Yeah.
So then they have a really interesting conversation. As they're traveling into Fortos, DM has this like shiver that goes over her. And Henry was like, what? She's like, you didn't feel that? And he was like, oh no, like it must be like a female thing or something. Which like,
oh my God. Oh my God.
Why would it, what does that have to do with anything? Like, it's so dumb. But basically Henry tells her that, okay, so we know that every realm has two different types of magic. So Lumnos has like light and shadow. There's always two. Okay.
It's like complementary.
But people only get one. Now there are rare people like Luther who get both. And that's why he's the heir to the throne, because it's very rare. He's super special, super, you know, powerful. Okay. And so Henry tells her in Fortos, though, it works differently, that the female descended always get the healing magic and the males always get the killing magic. And so then therefore, when it's time to name an heir, obviously, it's always going to be the male, because killing is more powerful than healing, some might say. And specifically that the males can make your body decay right in front of you.
Okay. So
almost like disintegrating a wolf.
So
okay, so she has a vision, and that she recognizes that as a true vision. So she doesn't think that it's like the wolf. She does know that, like, I'm actually not on the battlefield right now. I am having a vision of something that could be happening. So she's at least able to distinguish between hallucinations, aka real things, and actual visions, which are actual visions. Take a shot. Every time I say the word vision, you'll be blackout drunk. So she's standing on this battlefield. We'll go into that later. But the progression of her magic, where it says like it was a creature of its own, this thing inside of me, when she was fighting with Henry about, after she found out about the Guardians, she was like, wanted to kill him. Like, she actually wanted to physically hurt him.
And yeah, it like really shook her.
She was like, leave, because she was like scared of what she might do to him.
Yeah.
And it's like, clearly the voice is growing in power inside of her, or maybe she's opening herself up more to it without knowing. But she says, the voice that had taken residence inside me whispered back. It heard the calling too. And now it paced, a rumbling beast in its pen, waiting for me to find the courage or the madness to set it free.
Oh,
number one, great fucking quote.
Courage, yeah, or the madness is like
chef's kiss.
So good.
So interesting. And I love how it was so natural. And as the book goes on, now DM might be like ignoring it, but the reader is seeing this voice, and it's always italicized.
Yes.
Getting stronger and stronger and stronger inside of her. So during the scene that we're not going to get into about the killing of this small child, she's fighting this male descended who's a piece of shit. And for no reason whatsoever, she is able to fend off his attacks. So he is literally attacking her with his magic, and she is but a mere mortal. I'm putting that in quotations. And it says, tingling exploded through my body. That same peculiar icy heat I felt in the palace and then again in the forest now poured into every crevice, every soft curve, setting my skin ablaze with waves of frost and flame.
It's very interesting.
Interesting. So yeah, basically she's like, he keeps trying to hit her. And it's like another icy tingling, another blinding glow. And she's like, he missed again. Like,
this killed me. This absolutely killed me.
DM. DM.
Okay. DM. We are really, really choosing.
But I saw him aim at me, and yet he missed. It's like, sweetie.
And I'm like, can't. He literally looks confused.
And you know who's not confused? The reader. We know.
We know. Ask us.
Yep. Like, it was just, and we can get to this in the ending, but, like, the voice when she's inside the armory, like, gives her so much strength. The voice paced like a predator inside me, snapping its jaws and urging me to action. It wanted me to move, to leave, to save myself, to fight for myself.
I love the voice.
All the things my own head and heart had willingly abandoned. And then it says, the voice inside of me roared to life and unlocked some new cavern of defiance deep within. I felt only the pound of my heart and the call of the voice as it urged me on. And it's just so interesting. And so she takes the flame root to treat the, quote, hallucinations and visions. Okay, turns out she be angry off that flame root. She's
oh my gosh.
Teller's like, oh my God, you're unbearable. It's ridiculous.
Like, do you, like, I feel like everybody refers to the Descended as so cold and so, but yet we do see them have emotion. We see Lily, we see Luther, like, occasionally it'll break through. And, you know, the flame root seems to, like, really subdue her emotions. It's like a muffler. And then as soon as she stops, all of a sudden it's like too much. Like, she can't control it. Like, the urge to hurt Henry, the urge to hurt her father at the end. And it's driving her insane. And I wonder if, like, part of a Descended's learning how to, like, deal with their magic and their, like, strength is learning how to shut off that part. Like, maybe that's why they appear so cold, is because they have to tamper it down. Yeah. That's one of the things they learn how to do.
Yeah.
And she hasn't ever learned how to do that. The flame root was doing it. It was a crutch.
What does the flame root do is my question. Because, like, why is it under such lock and key by the Fortos King? Because, like, literally when they go to see it in that thing, in the little lock and cage, that woman is like, you could be beheaded by knowing this exists. I can't access this. The only person who can access it is the Fortos King.
Oh, you know why, I bet? Because it literally stopped her magic. Can you imagine if mortals got their hand on it and they were able to somehow, like, make a bomb, a powdery substance that blew up in front of Descended?
You know what? I have a theory. I don't think the real deal was Teller going to the Descended school. I think the real deal between the crown and Arlie was for the flame root powder.
I agree with that.
Because why else would she go be the crown's healer? I mean, like, yeah, I'm sure it's, like, more money and stuff, but she clearly hates Descended, or, like, wants to keep DM so far from them. So why would you take a job that works directly with them if not to continue to protect your daughter and get this powder that is, like...
And that, like, pharmacy woman says you have to have all nine realms approval.
To even get an ounce, you guys. Do you know how little an ounce is? That's crazy.
Like, DM has, like, pounds
of it. Oh, she was, like, pouring it into the water.
Yeah.
The only other thing I wanted to mention before we move on is Sarai. Basically, we just were very curious about what this connection is that her and DM clearly have. She comes to the palace, for DM comes for the first time. Sarai is very interested in her, and the guards are like, oh no, like, don't get near her. She's gonna, like, get mad at you. And DM's like, oh, she seems just, like, very curious about me.
Very chill.
And then she's, like, circling, and she asks Mara, like, does she ever normally do this? And Mara's like, no, never.
Mara's petrified.
Petrified, which, y'all, I would be too. I would be too. But, like, do we think this is going to be, like, a bonded pair? Like,
oh, well, now knowing the ending, because Sarai is beholden to the crown, and she, so now she's the queen.
Right. But, like, Sarai knew that before.
Yes. Oh,
like,
yes.
She clearly could sense it in her.
I bet you Sarai was like, okay, well, how come nobody can understand my clicking beat, like,
my clicking noises? Snapping noises.
Like, I am trying to tell you that this is my future owner, and that she is chill and cool, and, like, back the fuck up, and, like, I need you all to, like, just, like, relax, okay?
I've been bored on that perch over there for, like, 3 years.
Because the dude's been dying for a while.
I'm ready. Like, get it together and stop being so mean to her.
I'm ready.
I'm so interested what is going to happen between
them. I feel the hints dropped with that creature is going to be really interesting. Yeah. And at that end thing at the end, it was, like, this very specific, like, Sarai's, like, losing it. And that also, like, 5 seconds later, Luther's like, oh yeah, you know, the next king she just, like, automatically goes to. So, you know, is she distressed because she knows he's dying? He's like, probably. And I just picture her up. So I'm like, come on, guys. Jesus Christ. Like,
pick up what I'm putting down, for the love of God.
Okay, so let's take a little pivot, a little sidestep. I'd love to talk about the family dynamics in this book.
Yes.
So this is a little different for us in a really refreshing way. We usually would call this segment of our evening the found family section. And we actually, like, don't have or need a found family in this story so much. Like, I don't know where we're going to go, but right now it's like she does have this, like, strong family unit, which is was really nice to read and different. Exactly. And it just Like, I can't remember the last time we read a main female character that her father wasn't morally gray or evil or dead. Like, I actually can't remember. And I feel like there's this just one quote that I just love so much that, like, okay, so she says, "Though we Bellators had our problems, I knew with soul deep certainty what a loving and happy marriage looked like. My mother and father had made sure Teller and I always knew what it was to be cherished, to be given a soil of unconditional love to nourish our growth and keep us rooted no matter what the world storms." And like, if that isn't parenting goals, I swear, any of us want is our 20-year-old children looking back as that's their childhood. Like, that's what they think of as their childhood, you know? Like, and it was so interesting having that be where she's coming from. Mm-hmm. In, you know, like, we're not used to it.
She has that foundation for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially her dad, I think. Well, I mean, granted, her mother's gone. So, of course, especially her dad.
So, de facto, it's her dad.
And yes, the ending fight does happen, and we'll get there.
Right. But, like, families fight.
Families fight.
But, like, the relationship there is so
it's
beautiful.
You feel the love. You feel the love. You feel the happiness. You feel the joy with the family. You feel the trust.
Yeah.
There's not this, she's not seeking it elsewhere. Mm. She's not, like, you know, looking for safety and comfort in Henry, because she does have that. And I think that's why she feels so secure to be like, like when he proposes 2 times and she's like, I don't know about this.
Can I think about it?
I love their banter. I loved her and Teller's relationship. Like, it was all just really nice to see. It was just like fun. And again, that's why we keep saying refreshing, I think, because it's not this like, she has nobody in this world and she's alone and like, she's the chosen one.
And her father is like throwing her into the pits to fight because he needs her to prove himself. No.
Exactly.
He loves her.
And he did a great job, I feel like, of building her up and like giving her all these tools and these things to then be like, okay, you make your own decisions. Like, but I've created this foundation for you. Like, he says, "The world will try to disarm you, DM. Do not let them. By wits or by weapons, be prepared at all times." Like, he just like gives her these like little things that come back to her throughout the book that I feel like shape her in a way that it's not like he's doing that to be scary. It's like a safe space. Like, they spar in the backyard and it's like a like
life lesson.
Oh, I love their combo when they spar.
It's really sweet. Yeah. And like, they end it with like, "Love you, commander." Like, "Love you, soldier." I think in another context that wouldn't have been sweet to me, but I really liked it here. I thought it was really sweet.
It's a bit of like, it's almost like an inside joke between the two of them.
Yeah.
I loved their whole dynamic, all the family. And like, that leads into her and Teller. Like, her and Teller, I loved their dynamic. I felt like that was such a fun sibling dynamic. Like even when she's asking him about Lily and she's like, "Okay, but please do not be a dum-dum. Like, you understand you can't love the princess, right?" And like, within the same conversation, she still brings it back at the end to be like, "Okay, but you know that no matter what, I would support you, right?"
Yeah.
And then she's like, "I'd be the proudest aunt." Like, it's so sweet.
It's like,
and then she's like, "No matter what happens, I'll have your back. Just be careful."
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that's what they've been taught by their parents to do for each other. You know, like, they're just like, we like look out for each other.
We support each other. We look out for each other. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that aspect of it.
Yeah. And also like Andre just accepting DM so wholly as like his daughter. And it's never like, he's my stepfather. Like, that's her father. And he is so loving towards her and so like gentle with her, especially for someone in the military, which just, they're not usually known for being like very soft. They don't let themselves really show a lot of vulnerability because it can be weakness, but he's sweet to her.
So kind and so sweet.
And he shows them vulnerability. Like, he's not trying to be like this macho guy all the time. Like, there's this whole thing where they do get in the conversation at the dining table and it's so cute and funny, and she's like, "Well, I saw Lillian today," and Teller's like, and like chokes on his food. And she's and like, "Oh, like, yeah, I invited her to dinner." He's like, "What?"
And Andre has no idea. Andre has no idea that she's the princess.
Yeah, he's like, "Who's Lily?"
He's like, "Who's Lily?" DM's like, "Oh, you know, she's like this really beautiful girl. Isn't she pretty?" And like, Teller's like, "Yeah, she's like really pretty."
Shut up.
And he's like, "Leave me alone."
And he does. Oh, I can't remember what it is, but in that scene, he's like, you know that anyone you guys bring here, we would welcome to our family with open arms. Like, he's so lovely.
And is then, this when she asked, DM says, like, Dad, how did you know that Mom was the one?
Oh, I love this.
I love the quote. Christina, do you have the quote?
Yes. He says, my darling DM, you asked how I knew your mother was the one. The truth is, I just knew. There was never a decision to make. Whatever path she was on, that was where I belonged. By her side and by yours. Any other option was unthinkable.
Unthinkable. I just knew.
That's like, beautiful. I love him. I'm sorry. Like, I love him. Like, I know, but at the end, we're going to get there. But, like, you know what? He's doing his best. And isn't that all we're all doing as parents?
He's doing his best.
That's right.
All families have big fights.
They sure do.
That's right.
I think, and last thing on this that I think this will lead us into when we talk about it in the ending, mm-hmm. like, I do think that Henry specifically uses this. He feels like he knows what her dad stands for, and he uses that to, like, jab at her and hurt her specifically with the knowledge. I think he's specifically trying to shake the foundation that she's on. Like, he's specifically trying to be like, you don't know where you stand. Your dad is leaving you.
You need me.
He literally says, like, he's their puppet. He chose them over you and Teller.
That's so gross.
And he's like, go ask him. Go ask him right now. And, like, that's what leads to the ending. But I think that was specific because he knows he's grown up with her. He knows what a rock her dad is for her.
Yeah.
Like, it's bullshit.
And because Henry is who he is, he can't see outside his bubble that there would ever be any way that anyone else's point of view or where they're coming from will be valid.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's very black and white, like how Henry thinks.
Yeah.
It's just such a narrow way of looking at the world. And it's giving, like, just being a dumb young idiot. And I think that just comes with not having a lot of life experience and not being able to look at a situation and see that there are multiple sides.
They're gray areas. Totally. They're gray areas. He's totally, it's all black and white to him.
Yeah. Which is, like, because he's not smart enough. But you know who is smart enough?
Luther.
Luthy?
Lulu?
You know who isn't a Lulu? Lulu.
Lulu.
Oh, I love it. Lulu Prince. Prince Lulu.
I hate it. Someone give us a name for the love of God. I can't deal with it.
What is their like relationship name? Like
DeLulu.
Actually, wait. DeLulu.
Yeah, it works.
She is a bit DeLulu.
She is. She is. He is not, but she is.
Hashtag DeLulu.
DeLulu for Lulu.
DeLulu for Lulu.
There's some, like, Gen Z-er on here going, like, you're not using that right.
You're absolutely not.
Please don't tell us. Let us live in ignorance.
Yeah, whatever. We like it. But you guys, let's just start off. They're clearly mates. It's giving mates.
The most maniest mates has ever made it.
Like, this isn't, listen. This is not our first rodeo.
No, it's not.
Like, no, it's not. Like, we have been around the block. We have ran the marathon. Like, they are mates.
Mates.
Like, you can't, maybe it's not called that in this world. You call it whatever you want. Whatever the equivalent is.
Do you know the one little time we got the mate word? I freaking saved
it. What is it?
So King Arthur's dying. Yes. And he's like, you know, he's more than just that to us. He's like, also brother and father and mate and sibling.
It's just thrown in there.
It's thrown in there. The word
shut
mate.
Up.
Yes.
Swear to God.
Yes.
Other mates.
He even says, he literally, when he's carrying her out of the burning building and goes to see his cousin Eleanor, or whatever her name is, and he's like, Eleanor, I think she's my. And then it, like, dot, dot, dots. And I'm like, finish the sentence, please. It's one word and it's one syllable. It takes no time.
They're mates. Here's when we knew, friends. The first time she smelled him and he smelled like cedar, and I said, mates. I said, that's the love interest, and they're mates. You don't smell somebody like that unless you're mates.
Pen. Okay. We see what you're doing. We see who this is.
And we love it. And from that moment on, we disregarded Henry completely. Like, wasn't even on our radar. We were like, Henry.
Dust in the wind.
Yep. Like the wolf. Dust in the wind.
Like the wolf.
Henry who?
I think she, like, at some point, she's like, when she and Henry are having sex, she's like, ugh. She's like, and I wanted to burn. I was like, you know who'd make you burn?
Luther.
You know who's going to make you burn?
Luther.
Luther.
He is so hot. Like, I just love, but I love how sassy she is with him. And again, he clearly likes it. But again, it's not too much, but she's just so funny. Like, she goes to the children that were hurt in the original scene. She goes back to, like, check on them. And he's, like, insisting that his own cousins call him Prince Luther, which, like, is kind of weird.
I think it was like because they're pissing him off though, right?
Right. He doesn't like them, but I'm still like, okay, calm down. But like, she can get him to loosen up. It's fine. We have time. We have multiple books. Yeah. So she's like, oh my God, what kind of person expected family to use formal titles? And then like in her mind, she's like, harder, your highness. Wilt thou give me permission to come, your highness? Let me kneel for you and show you and show the prince's little prince a good time, your highness.
I'm dying.
God, yeah. He's like aghast. And in the best way.
We like read some of these books where mates can like hear each other.
Yes.
And like he kind of looks at her and I was like, can he hear her?
I thought that too.
If like, he heard that, that would be the funniest
dying.
I would love fucking POV later. More. Like the little novella of him be like, oh my God, I literally can't contain myself.
Remember that one time when you were like treating four-year-olds?
Yeah.
And you were like... And you were like, wilt thou give me permission to come, my highness?
To come, your highness?
Eventually, you're looking up, he's like, do you want to kneel for me and show the little princess prince a good time?
That is how he should do it, actually.
That would be so funny.
Hilarious.
But another really hot moment between them is when she comes back to the castle and he has to give her a pat down for weapons. And
pat me down
any
day.
Pat me down, Shadow Daddy, because...
Oh. Put it on my sexy bingo card. Yes. Pat down for weapons. But yeah. Like, it worked. It worked.
Yeah. He was like, I wouldn't want you to think I wasn't taught to ask for a woman's consent. Hot. And then he's like on his knees and he's like looking up at her and he's like, oh, you seem like distracted. And she's like, I'm too busy enjoying the view. And I was like, yes,
DM. Same girl. Same.
Same. Ditto.
I love the sass.
Oh, I love it.
She does not. Lily says later, like at some point, she's like, yeah, my brother really likes you. And he's like, and she's like, I'm sorry, come again? Like,
what?
Lily's like, yeah, no, like, I think he likes you because you're the only one that like argues with him. And I'm like, this is so matey because it's like, I'm the heir apparent, but like, yeah, give me that.
Tell me what to
mouth.
Do. Oh, I love it.
Like, you see him like finding her so enthralling and totally. Like these moments where he's so composed and then like, I can't remember what's happening, but someone, one of the guards calls her a mortal slut or something. And he just loses it and his like shadow powers
does
go nuts and I was
picks him up off the ground and he's like
so
apologized
hot.
To her and
I was like
oh god.
And here for it, we love that. Like they just all throughout the book there's signs though that they are there's some kind of connection between them, whatever you want to call it.
Totally.
Like she says, like, his sapphire gaze had sirens blaring in my head. It reminded me so much of the voice that had plagued my thoughts in recent weeks. How the thrill of a fight woke it up and set it begging for release.
I really couldn't get past that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's just scenes where she just, like, literally steps towards him and, like, she can't contain herself. Like, she literally, like, puts her hand out and, like, staggers closer to him. As if, like, she's drawn to him in a way that she can't...
Their gazes, like, they always find each other.
Anna, do you want to talk about a really hot part?
Oh, my God.
That, speaking of...
So when she, like, is seeing the king for the first time with Moira, and she's supposed to do that thing for the guardians and, like, sneak away, and she runs away, which, like, girl, don't do that.
Sweetie,
like,
looks so, it's
like,
so
don't
obvious.
Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious.
Behind a column, like, her arrows are out.
And Luther's like,
hey, I see you. I know
you're making
there.
It hard for me to pretend like I can't see you.
So she this is, it's a fail. The mission fails. So she comes back to the king's like room, and she gets one of the descended guards pulls her arm behind her back. She's in pain. He's like pinching her arm, and then the other guard has like a knife to her neck, and they're like, you know, we found her, King Prince Luther or whatever. And Luther goes apeshit, like that cool kind of like. Scary, icy, cold type anger.
Hot one.
Yeah. And she thinks like, oh my God, he must be so furious at me. Like,
no, sweetie.
No. It's because his mate is bleeding. Okay.
That's why he's furious.
He's like, hands off of her. Give me your blade. And he like says the guy's name. And then, guys, if this isn't a dark romance move, he stabs the dude. But DM is like, kind of like, I don't think I should be turned on, but I'm kind of turned on because that was a really great stab wound because you didn't kill him, but it inflicted pain.
Like, my healer brain can tell me also that like that is an impressive spot because like he will be fine, but he is in pain and like it was strategic.
And like that was hot.
And he's like, I'll deal with you later. And then he like grabs her and he's like, are you okay?
Yes.
Okay,
Anna, do you want to like run us quickly through the ending with like the explosion and everything like that?
Okay, so where Christina left us off after that really sweet family moment with Andre and Teller and DM, there's a big explosion. What we forgot to mention was DM earlier in the book was a dum-dum and told the guardians about the secret passage into the palace. Which, like, girl, what did you think was going to happen? Like, I don't know what you thought. Like, yeah. They were going to show up with Girl Scout cookies.
Like, oh, I literally, from the second, I was like, you freaking dumb dumb.
Okay, so she chases after the bomb. I'm going to quickly kind of run us through this so we can get to, like, the fun parts. So she grabs her healing stuff. She runs to the palace, and she gets intercepted by the guardians, who are, I wonder why they're on the road suspiciously leaving the palace. Henry stops her, and he, like, forcibly grabs her, and he's like, do not go over there. You are coming with me.
Ew.
And she's like, unhand me. And he's like, don't make me do this.
Like, it's so scary. Ew.
Yeah, no. So she remembers her training from her dad. And she's like, okay, act like you're going along with them. Be like, yeah, sorry. I don't know why. I was so confused. I just, like, you know, my healer instincts. I'm just a woman.
I just can't control my emotions.
So, and the guys are like, okay, yeah, you're just.
Yeah, because they're.
Boys are stupid.
They are.
So they start to walk away. She tricks them. She takes off. But she loses her healing bag. And so she's at the armory now. And that's what was blown up. And we get a who did this to you moment. Because he's like, why are you here? And she's like, well, I had my bag. He's like, where's your bag? She's like, I was attacked. And he's like, he stopped. His eyes darkened as they unapologetically roamed my body. Did they hurt you?
Love it.
I love this moment.
It's so hot.
Okay, so anyway, so she's tending. So she's tending to, like, the wounded, and it's not
because she feels like she did this, because this is the house of the person with the child. Like, this is the test she did earlier was for the Bennett house. This is, like, the Bennett armory. So the paper she stole when the little girl was poisoned led to this, pretty much.
Correct. And it goes back to, like, all of the guilt and all of the internal struggles she's been having in regards to a healer and treating the king versus, I don't want the child to be hurt. Why was the child, like, is suspicious of, like, the kid that was poisoned and that was her test. Like, all of this is kind of not adding up to her.
Yeah.
But there's this really beautiful quote that she has. So she's tending to the wounded, and there's still some people, survivors, and the descended can't fit in this tiny little hole. And apparently this was strange, but she's like, I will do this. I will volunteer as tribute. This is my, like, sacrifice.
My penance. Yeah.
I'm guilty. Yep. My penance, basically. And Luther is really anxious about it because, hello, mates.
Because they're mates.
But he can't not tell her to go in. So she goes in, and while she's, like, searching and looking for people, she's seeing a lot of dead, like, bodies, people who didn't make it. And she says to herself, killing had seemed so easy when I'd face a descended man in the alley. After watching him murder the mortal woman, I was ready to take his life in a heartbeat. My rage so fierce that ending his existence barely warranted a second thought. It was the same fury Henry had felt after watching the mortal boy get trampled by the descended man on horseback. A need for vengeance, for justice. I had believed that day in the alley had made me ready, like it had for Henry, to become a guardian, to join the war, to do whatever it took to protect my people, to kill if necessary. But the man I faced that day had earned his fate when he murdered two innocents. As far as I knew, these guards had committed no crime worse than being descended in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then she remembers a quote from her father. War is death and misery and sacrifice. War is making choices that will haunt you for the rest of your days. If this was the kind of killing that war required, I wasn't ready, and I never would be.
Oh, so my God. Beautifully put.
Love that quote. Like,
so gorgeous.
So she has this internal struggle, and she starts to, like, pass out because, hello, smoke inhalation and
it is
whatever.
A fire. It's a
blaze. It is a fire.
But she finds two people who are alive. Uh-huh. And so the voice comes out, and it kind of, like, wakes her up. And she's like, I've seen mothers, like, lift carts off children in, like, these, like, great feats of strength. I'm like, girl, you are, like, half descended. Like, stop. We are DeLulu.
If you are not, you, girlfriend.
Yes. Girlfriend.
Sweetie. Like, at this point, I was a little bit like, oh, okay, we need to wake up. Like, we need to see what's the writing on the wall in front of us and just accept the reality of what is the truth. And so I just need to care. We need to see it in book 2. That's all I'm going to say. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
I'm good with it now. I'm good with it now. But I'm done with it now.
Yeah. I'm good, but I'm done.
Okay, so she starts to, like, drag these men out, these descended men, and then Luther's there waiting for her. And he's, like, holding up, I don't know, whatever. He's using his magic. But he's, like, she's, you know, like, suffocating. And he's, like, I'm coming for you. And he's, like, hold on, DM, I'm coming for you.
I love this.
And it's just, like, this really sweet moment. And he, like, uses his magic to, like, try and get her. And she's like, no, like, save them first. And so she touches his magic, which, we haven't seen anybody else touch anybody else's magic. And I'm like,
I didn't know you could do that.
He like threw out a rope and yeah. she was like, yes. nope. And then took it and put it around the other yes. people. Like it was like that yes. tangible.
Yes. It's like as my hand brushed against Luther's magic, the sensation that thrummed along my skin was unlike anything I'd ever felt. Like starlight made solid. It seemed to flow into me and coat my body. I took the strands of light and wrapped them around a binding around the wrist of the unconscious man. Luther's magic hummed at my touch. And I swore I heard a distant harmony.
What?
Harmony? What?
Harmony.
On. What's happening?
Our harmonious.
I know. Love it.
Okay. So this is when he takes the people out and it's just him and her. So he walks through and it says, we both froze as something ancient, something profound passed between us. It was a primal force that transcended word and thought. It was not of this world, but entirely woven within it. It warmed my blood with a calming peace I'd never known, yet filled me with the terrible dread of a fate I could not avoid.
Like, mates.
It's yeah. clicking in place. Mates. It's clicking. Mates.
Yep, 100%.
So this is where we have another vision. And the first time she sees the vision, she doesn't know who the other man is on the battlefield. But in this vision, it's clear as day. It's him. And she's like in onyx armor with like a gilded night black blade, which I'm like waiting in the next book. Maybe we're going to see this like night black blade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Luther is there. And in the vision, they both look at each other across the battlefield and they both put their hands. It's like over their heart.
Yeah,
over their
right, left side. Right.
And then when they come out of the vision, they both have the exact same vision. We find out like later he has the same one.
Yeah.
They both are out of the vision. They both have their hands over their hearts staring at each other.
In real life?
In real life. And then she passes out.
Yeah, she sure does.
So they're running. We've already talked about this, how he's like saves her. And she's like, you know, he goes to his cousin. I think she's my dun, mate. Dun, dun. She wakes up at some point and she's like, it smelled like home.
Guys. Like home.
Okay, so the next big thing that happens is she wakes up and he's like, hey, like, don't worry, I sent word to your family. I told them you're fine. Can you check on my father before you go? Because she's like miraculously healed. She's like, oh, I guess I really wasn't that injured. And he's like, okay, yeah, like, sure. He literally goes, you still believe that? And she's like, believe what? And there's like a sadness that passes over his eyes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's just like, okay, cool.
Wow, so, we have so far to go until you can accept this, mate. Yeah. Like, we got so many steps.
Here and we
got to
get here, girlfriend.
Like, good God.
Oh, what a journey we're going to go on together.
What a journey.
Truly.
Okay, so she goes to see the king and she's like, sure, okay, fine. And then Luther gets called mm-hmm. away. And he's like, hey, can you stay here? And she's like, you're just going to leave me like alone with the king? Like, that's cool. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I trust you. And she's like, okay, cool. So again, she's like, the king starts to stir. And so she's like, you know what I'm going to do? Commit blasphemy.
I'm going to read him those rites.
I'm going to read him the sacred rite of the old gods.
You know what feels right in this moment? This descended king, when you know what he needs to hear.
She's like, this seems, I've got it. I've got the perfect thing to say.
And like,
this always works for me.
This always works. Things always turn out well.
Always.
So she does this, but he starts to wake up because, you know.
That's what the rites do. Does. That's what they
this
do.
This is the time. And she's alone. And he says, they told me you would come for me. They told me your blood would shatter our stone and lay waste to our borders. The king gasped, his grip on me tightening. I am not afraid, devourer of crowns, ravager of realms, herald of vengeance. Now that is giving very old gods, ravager of realms.
Like
destroying the current, like, yeah, all of the realms.
All of them.
That they're currently there.
Ravaging
That's
them.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so then she says, and I don't know if this means anything, but she says Luther's name twice. She goes, let me go get Luther. And he like startles. And she goes, no, Luther. And that's when he's taken over by some like female mm-hmm, deity.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I bring up the name Luther, the reason I say his name is because the thing that the female voice says is, give him our gift, daughter of the forgotten. When the end has come and the blood has spilled, give our gift to my faithful heir and tell him this is my command. So a lot of hymns in there. It's pretty specific.
You think it's obviously Luther.
I feel like it has to do with Luther.
So she's saying, like, but DM being the daughter of the forgotten.
Yes. Give him our gift. Tell him it's my commitment. Like, Luther's expecting something.
But also, yes, she calls Luther faithful heir. Is that, heir, like, the female voice saying, like, actually, maybe Luther does pray to the old gods, like, he is still faithful? Or is that the king?
I like that, Christina.
Or is that
like
the king too, being like, no, he's my faithful heir. Like, give him what you're going to.
No, because it's the female voice. That is all in the female voice. So right. I think that makes so much sense. Like, maybe he is praying to the old gods, or he's faithful maybe to like what the kindred originally wanted.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Oh, that's so interesting. I love that.
So then that happens, and then the crown appears above his head.
The crown of Lumnos. Which,
and then like everything like startles, the guards rush in because they hear voices, obviously. And, you know, Luther's like, what the hell? Like, he's like, he's a little accusatory, and she's just like, I didn't do anything. And he's like, kind of suspicious, but like, what happened?
I mean, I can't blame him.
So then she's like, I gotta go. I can't be here. And she like takes off. And Luther's like, wait, chases after her. He catches up to her outside the palace.
This was rough.
He's basically just like, you're just like lying to yourself. Like, don't tell me you don't feel my magic, because I feel yours.
That was hot.
It was so hot. And I love that he's calling her out on
it. Oh, yeah.
He's like, I can't tell if you're a really bad liar or if you're just really good at lying to yourself. Mm. And it's like such a great like line.
It's such a mate thing to pick up on that and to know totally. That. Like,
yes. And then he says to her, and I love this, and this is also suspicious. He says, you think I fear my own death? Because she's got like a knife to him. And he says, you think I fear my own death? He whispered in my ear, every day I draw breath is as much a curse as a gift. I've been living on borrowed time for longer than you can imagine. If you're the way my fate finally catches up to me, I can't fathom a more beautiful end. Which, like, okay.
Wow, sweet. I love
also,
that.
Also, why are you dying?
What does that mean? I've been living on borrowed time for longer than you can imagine.
Every breath is as much a curse as a gift.
As a gift.
Like, what is his curse? He has a curse. I think the kindred curses him. I think there's something cursed.
Yes. And she's the cure. Like, daughter of the forgotten, like, give him our gift. Tell him it's my command. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to, like, the woman at the beginning. Do you remember the woman in Pleasure Row?
Yes.
Because also, she does magic. And it's not the kind of magic that should be Lumnos magic. I think she's a progeny. It's a woman who sees her, like, spying on her mom and Luther having that conversation. Yeah. And the woman says to her, like, she talks about her father. And he's like, he knows about you. He's waiting for you. And then she's like, no, my bio father is dead. He's like, well, she says, he should be, but he's not. He's a survivor like you are. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then she says, she takes over DM's mind, kind of. DM can't, locks up, and she can't use her.
Terrifying.
She can't move. And which is giving a giving progeny type.
Yeah.
Because she's not in that realm. And she says in like italics, almost as if she's like speaking through her mind, when forgotten blood, forgotten daughter, mm-hmm. when forgotten blood on heartstone falls, whatever that is, then shall the chains be broke. Life for life, old debt requires, or eternal be his yoke. Yoke meaning like life, I bet. So like,
yeah, I don't
eternal
know.
Eternal be
also,
his yoke.
Sorry, in that section, does it mention what color the woman's eyes are? Just curious. Because while you're finding that, let me tell you, Umbros is the realm of mind and secret, which what she did seemed very much like something to do with, obviously she took over DM's mind. Okay, so it says, iris is black with hearts to match. A kiss and soon your mind they'll snatch.
Ooh. So, yeah.
Black eyes.
She's clearly from Umbro. So again, how is she doing
that? Eyes so dark they appeared black. Yeah.
I did!
Wow.
Wow. Okay, so she's from Umbros.
What is that land? What is their power?
Umbros, mind and secret.
Oh, and Umbros is the one that I was saying earlier, like, I think the Queen of Umbros is going to be, like, cool.
What if that was the Queen of Umbros?
And she's the one that says, like, the same woman says, like, that mother of yours thought she could hide you from the world, but secrets like that can't stay kept forever. And that peers the kindred are done waiting, is what she says.
Ooh.
But then she's like, so easy you are to read in this sad state. And I wonder if, like, she means, like, this sad state, like, you're not fully in your power.
Yeah,
like, you're,
I'm so easy. Right.
Like, I can read you so easily, like, with my mind powers, because you're just
so numb.
When she was still taking the flame rope. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And she says, when we meet again, remember this moment, child, how I could have made you kneel, how I could have made you beg. And she's like, and then she like lets her go. And she calls her daughter of the forgotten. She says, listen to me and listen close, daughter of the forgotten.
Wow. Did I read this part? I do not remember any of this.
What an interesting choice by Penn Cole to put that so early. Because early. I feel like it's really early. And then you just get so distracted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Because there's so much there.
There's a lot to unpack.
I think Umbrose is like deep embedded in this shit.
Agreed.
Like, I think they've got little plants everywhere. And I bet you there's a lot of progeny over there.
Okay, yes. But also, because Umbrose's power is mind, they also could have a connection with the kindred. That's how she could know that the kindred are done waiting. Ooh. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so we're almost to the end, but I quickly just want to like, okay, so he's chasing her and he says like, I don't have long for this world. That's not what he says, but basically like, whatever. He's like, so if I'm going to die, he's like, let me die with a taste of you on my lips. And then they like collide in a fiery passion.
Hot.
And I love this. Okay, she says like, I'd never been kissed like this before. And the only thing that could come to her brain was what her father said. The truth is that I just knew. And then it freaks her out. She like pushes him away. And he's like, really? Like, are you like seriously? And she's like, I'm not one of like these town floozies. Like, I'm not just going to spread my legs for you. And he goes like very still and very cold. And he's like, how could you think that of me? Like, why would I do that to you? Like, what have I given you any like reason to believe that? And then she says, the realization hit me like a punch to the gut. All this time, I dismissed Luther as some ice cold and heartless, too frosty to feel anything true. But Luther wasn't cold at all. Luther was an inferno. Looking at him now was like staring in a mirror in the worst kind of way. I hid behind false bravado and snarky jokes while Luther's shield was forged with brooding stares and clenched jaws. But inside, we were one and the same. Inside, we were rattled. We rattled the bars, keeping us trapped in lies we didn't choose. Inside, we roared with an insatiable craving for more. Inside, we paced and we planned and we waited. Inside, we burned.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
I love
Penn.
It.
Killing it.
Together, like, so in good. This moment. And it does, yes, make us frustrated with DM because we're like, mm-hmm. yes, yeah. DM, that is all true. Why yes. Why are you pushing him away? And then, isn't this when she goes then to Henry? This is when she then like...
Yes, this is when she runs to Henry and she like, she goes to Maura. She's like, I don't want to be a healer anymore. I want to like forge my own path. And Maura's very accepting. And then she goes to Henry and she's like, did you know? Like, how could you do this? Like, these are like, you know, and then we have that quote that we already read earlier where Henry like, yeah.
About violence and that it's the only way. And
then, yeah. And then Henry is like, by the way, why don't you go talk to your dad? He's a traitor. He's a puppet for the descended and he's accepted to be back in the army. And she's like, what? Like, how can he leave us? So she goes to her father.
Oh, y'all, this was so sad.
This was so sad. So she's like, Dad, like, is this true? And he's like, yes, but like, I have to do it. It's not really a choice.
Right. Like, he can't say like, no.
And she's like, but how can you leave us? And he's like, don't worry. Like, you'll be here. You'll take care of Teller. You've got the healing job. And she's like, well, actually, I quit that. And it's funny because it's like, as a parent, like, I can see, like, it's totally unwarranted and it's not okay what he says, but you can also see him panicking.
For sure.
Like, oh my God, like, okay, well, I thought we had a plan and you'd be able to take care of Teller because you can make money, but now you don't have a job and I'm not going to be here and your mother is gone. And I feel like we're seeing him crack. Mm-hmm. Like, we're finally seeing him be like, I am carrying the burden of all of this and I know your mother's alive, but I can't tell you where and I'm not allowed to talk mm-hmm. about it. And I feel like I'm breaking. And he's like, you have to marry Henry. And she's like, what the hell? Like, mother would never say that to me.
It's just so rough. And I think a big catalyst to everyone in this scene is that Teller starts crying and is like emotional because he like never does that. And mm-hmm. he's like, you're leaving us? Like, after mom's gone, you can't leave us. You're leaving us? And like, they all just lose it. And I think it escalates everything.
It escalates. And she says, like, mom would never make me do this. And he like breaks and he's like, well, she isn't here and we're all making sacrifices. And then she says to him, you are not my father. Which this man has raised you from the time you were a wee baby.
Oh, like a literal newborn baby.
Like a literal
newborn. He is your father.
Babe.
He absolutely is.
And I just as like a gut punches you. And then he says, be that. And he's kind of calm when he says this, which is like even worse. He's like, be that as it may, I am the closest thing that you will ever have to one. And then she says, perhaps you do, like talking about her mom, perhaps you do not look like for mom because you do not care. Perhaps you're the real reason she's gone.
Oh, damn. Which, like,
oh, damn. Oh. And then he yells, get out, which... also not cool, but like.
But like, I think.
I like to think that he didn't mean like forever. He just meant like get out of the house. Like,
let's all just like break apart and have a breather.
I feel like he was like, I can't deal with this right now.
Yes.
Totally.
This scene was so well written. I felt all the dynamics and I felt for everyone. And I felt like everyone handled it the best they could, you know? Like.
My dad always says that like families know how to push your buttons the most because they built your buttons.
Yeah.
Like you've spent so much time with your family growing up that they know what to trigger, like a fight response. And she does say that like when she says like you don't care about mom, it's her fight, the voice in her head is getting louder and louder. Mm-hmm. And she knows that she can either literally destroy him with like physicality or with words. And she chooses words. And it's a gut punch to him. And that's when he yells, get out. And then she runs into the forest. And we have our cliffhanger of her crumbling to the ground and light shining from her head.
Oh my gosh. And this was wild. This was crazy.
Also, then Teller runs after her. Thank God someone else witnessed it. Because I feel like someone else needs to be there to like see it.
Agreed.
So that we could also understand that it wasn't a hallucination or a vision, quote, quote. Like we needed someone to see it as well.
Right.
So the voice inside of her is like, free me, daughter of the forgotten. Release me. Claim me. I am your birthright and your destiny. Which is giving much bigger than just like the daughter of another descendant, like some random descendant.
Well, and bigger than the queen of Lumnos. Like to me, it's like, this is like more than just a realm, like queen, like you're queen of like all the realms.
Did you guys read this as this is the voice, like fight, destroy, like everything in her? Like this has been the voice. Or this is just a voice in her. Like because it's like free me made me feel like that was like, it was like.
The
like,
magic.
The free me is like, oh, I've been stuck in you being release like, fight, me. Destroy, you know.
Interesting. I don't know. It's interesting. So whenever the voice talks, it's italicized and bolded. And this is italicized and bolded.
But I think when the voice spoke with King Luther's room, it was just italicized.
It's just italicized, which to me, that's like a kindred or an old god.
Agree. Yeah. Okay, so I think this is the voice.
Maybe. I think this is the voice, and it's like, let me out. Like,
is this like going to be a whole like being inside of her situation?
I don't know.
I don't mind the voice.
Yeah, I don't.
As long as it doesn't become a problem.
We'll see. But yeah, basically Teller is like, DM. You're wearing the crown. You've been selected. You are the new queen of Lumnos.
You've been selected. He literally says you've been selected. I'm like, what is happening?
Wow, look at you with that final rose in your hand. Yeah. Like it was like, you're the next bachelorette. Like it's so funny. It
so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Christina, do you want to do epilogue really quick? And then we
guys,
can
wrap this epilogue
up.
Was okay. Wild. So there was so much thrown at us and like none of it really made sense. So just like sure pieces that stood out is all we're going to do.
Yeah.
Pretty much Aurelie is elsewhere in Amarion. We know she's on the Circle of Islands. She is there.
Yeah. I think she's in the Kindred Temple.
Okay. That makes logical sense.
I think
sense.
She's on the Kindred Temple in the center.
I was confused about that too, but
I think that's that a great sense. Assumption and I think we should go with it. So yeah, she talks a lot about a task that like what she's doing, i.e. being there is a task. Like it says, with a task this dangerous, she had only been able to trust 3 people with her plan and only 2 with her location. Which is like just a little tidbit of like, okay, well, who are those people?
Well, she says that like the 2 people who do know where she is, it took her 20 years to figure out how to get back to this place. So it was, she basically says, good luck to them trying to come save me here.
Yeah. Which is also wild. We get hints that she's been waiting out the king dying. Like the king dying means she can come back. Like it's like a, there's a weird,
Yeah. And she says like when she goes to visit the dungeon thingy that she only goes down 15 steps or whatever, she makes a point to say like 15 steps, as long as she stayed within 15 steps, she was safe. She'd learned that the hard way back then. But also she says that like she had spent the majority of her last time here on the island or wherever she is in that dungeon. And I think the hard way is that she went too far down and then got captured and kept down there.
So that whole scene. So she says, tonight she stopped at 12, like the 12th step. Tonight she stopped at 12. She stared into the depthless shadows. It's me. No. I came back for you. Which also, what the fuck does that mean?
What does that mean?
It's me. I came back for you. Only silence answered. She threw the match forward, holding her breath as the tiny flame nearly gutted on its path to the ground. It hit the floor and took an unlucky bounce backward, not far enough to fill the shadows, but far enough to see the edge of an old blackened stain on the ground, which was blood. And she turned and flew back up the stairs. And then she, in her head in italics, says, "He's gone." She reminded herself, "Dead. You killed him. You're safe. And so is she."
I think that means
DM. Which means it has to be her dad, right? Like, you killed him and you saved...
To save DM.
And yourself.
Yep.
But, so it's funny, because if he's dead, she's still going, "Hey, I came back for you." So is he dead?
Yeah, like who is she talking to?
Like, who is she talking to?
I don't know.
And then remember the woman in the beginning, the woman that we think is, like, probably from Umbrose, she says, "Your father is not dead. He's a survivor."
Oh, you're right, Anna.
So, like, I don't know. I don't know what's down there.
Something about her, the writing of inching down those steps and her being like, "It's me, I came back for you," terrifying. And then throwing the match and seeing the running, like, that was...
Oh my God, get off the stairs. Get out of the stairs. Why are you down there? Like, get back up.
I don't like scary movies. I don't like horror films.
I don't either.
Oh my God.
Okay, but read the very last line.
Yes, so it says, so 6 months, so she's been there or whatever. "The king of Lumnos was finally dead, which could only mean one thing. In 30 days, Aurelia Bellator was going home." Now, I don't know why it has to be 30 days.
What is 30 days? I think I would guess that there's 30 days for someone to, like, contest the throne, like, contest the crown with DM. And after, I bet, like...
Why would she wait that out?
Because something... DM has to be queen for her to come back. DM becoming queen and, like, I think maybe the coronation or something. It takes 30 days to, like, for her to be instated as queen. I'm making this up. And that's, like, the only way that Aurelie can come home.
And the only other thing that happens is that weird stone that she touches that, like, burns her hand. And then when the king dies, there's, like, all these archways with obelisks. And I think each one represents a realm.
Yes.
And so the flame, the blue flame on top of the obelisk goes out and the king dies. But then a light shoots up from the land, which I'm guessing is where DM is, and the light coming out of her.
Yeah.
It shoots up into the sky and then shoots back into the obelisk and relights. And the light goes into the gem rock thing, crystal thing that burned her, and it turns a sapphire blue.
You know whose eyes are sapphire?
Luther's.
Luther.
Wow.
Is that the Heartstone?
Maybe.
Maybe it is.
I was thinking it would be red, but what if it's sapphire?
Heartstone, because it's the color of their eyes.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All right.
Okay, let's wrap this up. I think that's it. I think we covered everything. That is book one. We are so excited to pick up book two. We obviously literally cannot wait. So we will be back with book two. And we are going to be doing more chapter chats for this series. Hopefully, as the books get longer, the chapter chats become more numerous. We will do our best. So make sure that you join our Patreon and follow along on there, because our chapter chats are so fun. And we love them. You guys love them. It's just a great time. So join us there. That link will be in our show notes. And follow us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast. And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Bye.
Cheers, listeners.
Cheers, happy reading. Cheers. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.